From the WUNC studios at the Natural Sciences Museum in downtown Raleigh, you're listening to All Things Considered. I'm Jeff Tiberi. Our panel is back to review the week in news. On the right is Becky Gray, a lobbyist and senior vice president at the conservative John Locke Foundation. To the left is Rob Schofield, director of research at NC Policy Watch, part of the liberal North Carolina Justice Center. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jeff.
Democratic Governor Roy Cooper introduced his budget proposal this week. It recommends 5.1% growth in state spending, raises for all teachers, principals, and state employees. It calls on the legislature to expand Medicaid, this among many other provisions. Let's acknowledge off the top, this is a symbolic budget draft. The executive doesn't actually appropriate any funds directly. From each of you, please, one thing you like in this proposal and one thing that you do not.
What I don't like about it, and I'll start with a negative, actually, is that it's still is a very modest in its aspirations. It actually still, over the two-year biennium, will take us down in state spending as a percentage of our total state personal income. So, in fact, we're investing less than we ought to be, less than we're investing now. So while it, so that's the negative part. The good thing is that it does make an effort to improve some programs that have been systematically abused, really, over the last several years and underinvested in. We had to see some improvement in environmental programs and other public service programs that have just been struggling mightily for the last few years. So it's a good start to put a bandage on a big problem.
What I like about this is that there's no tax increases in it. And Governor Cooper recognized in his remarks as he introduced his budget about North Carolina's growing economy and recognized that tax increases and a burden on North Carolina families and North Carolina businesses do impact that economic growth. I also like that he set aside a lot of money for savings. He put money into the state health plan. He also put money into the rainy day fund. I think that's a very important way to go with it. Thing that I don't like about it, Jeff, is kind of the overall spending growth. We're starting to see that ratchet up. The last three budget cycles have been, the growth have been under the growth of inflation plus population. Roy Cooper's budget at 5.1% increase is over that. That number right now looks to be about 3.8%. His budget is a 5.1% increase.
And the GOP in recent years has been closer to 2.5% in that growth in the state budgets. Rob, Democrats have not had a seat at the table in budget negotiations in recent years with supermajorities in both chambers and a Republican governor in Pat McCrory. How important is it symbolically, philosophically, for Governor Cooper to be involved in this?
Obviously, it's very important, but I think it's still maybe a kindergarten-sized seat that he's got. He's not going to be able to play a big role in, you know, crafting the details. I presume that the General Assembly will say, thank you very much, Governor, and go about passing the budget that they're, you know, interested in passing, and then we'll see.
Right. But I agree with you. I mean, people have referred to this budget as, you know, like the most expensive doorstop in Raleigh. But I do think that there are some things. I think that that all of these budgets are going to recognize increased pay for teachers. Republicans made that commitment a couple of years ago. Also, as I mentioned earlier, the savings reserves that have been put in, there's a commitment from the General Assembly that we've heard to do that too. So I think we are going to see some similarities in the budgets. I don't know that that is really directed by Roy Cooper's leadership as much as these are real needs that have been recognized that need to be taken care of in North Carolina.
Also this week in state politics, Larry Hall stopped by the General Assembly for a confirmation hearing. This came a week after he was subpoenaed to do so. Hall sported a marine blood red jacket. He answered 90 minutes worth of questions seated in front of about two dozen veterans. And then afterward, he held a cigar as he spoke with reporters. Rob, the spectacle just continues as the governor and legislature wrangle for power. This is great political theater, is it not?
I think that's maybe what the Senate wanted. They wanted the theater of it, and Larry Hall gave it to them. But I still don't think it resolves the issue as to whether these things are constitutional, these confirmation hearings. I suspect that, I mean, the court is going to be taking this up next week as to whether, in fact, this is a constitutional. This may be one of very few confirmation hearings that actually end up taking place. I didn't think anything substantive of note happened in the confirmation hearing, just as I didn't expect there would be. I just thought, all in all, it was sort of a silly exercise and probably a waste of everybody's time.
I think it was theater, but I think that it was positive theater. I like the idea of these confirmation hearings because it gives the public, it gives those of us who may not know some of these players. Now, we know Larry Hall, but many of the other appointees that Governor Cooper has made are people that many of us don't know. I think there's a real positive aspect to having a hearing to learn about these people. You know, the way that it's been done in the past is the governor makes his appointments, they get to work, and, you know, you may hear about them in the newspaper, you may not. I think that any governor should be proud of the appointments that he makes and he or she makes and should be welcome the opportunity to have a public forum to introduce them. And I think that's what this confirmation hearing did this week.
On a lighter note, lawmakers from both parties did come together this week when they filed the brunch bill. Listeners, you'll be excited to know you would be able to enjoy a Bloody Mary, a mimosa, or whatever else you want to enjoy on those Sunday mornings. Liquor by the drink would now be available at 10 a.m. as opposed to noon. Your thoughts?
I think this is a great bill. Like you said, bipartisan. It's refreshing to see them agree on something. And I think, you know, realistically, this is a legal product in North Carolina for people of age to be able to partake. To extend that hour till 10 o'clock in the morning, I think is a great idea. We're seeing other alcohol bills as well, and I think this is opening up in North Carolina with the craft brewery industry exploding. We're seeing some legislation that would loosen up some regulations for them, even talk of privatizing the ABC Commission in North Carolina. So I think this is a good bill. It's one that everybody can agree on, most people can agree on, and it gives us sort of a lighter thing to talk about these days.
Well, we do need light stuff to talk about. But I do think actually it's symbolic of a modernization that's taking place in our state, an urbanization that's taking place in our state. And that positive, progressive, modernistic trend is also evidenced in a lot of other issues like LGBT rights, social issues in which the state is transforming and moving forward into the 21st century. So I think it's symbolic of a change that's been underway for a long time. It's great. But I hope that it will continue in a lot more substantive areas as well.
Briefly, in the final moment or two that we have, Jeff Sessions, a lot of news this week on the U.S. Attorney General. Do you think he survives what has transpired this week and why?
Yes, I think he does. I think that he has handled this very well. He has admitted that in the questions during his confirmation that perhaps he should have been a little bit more expansive on it. He has recused himself from the investigation into any kind of Russian interference with elections. I think he's doing all the right things. And yes, I think absolutely he survives. I think the investigation goes forward, and I think we put this behind us and move on.
Survives in his post, obviously, not in life.
I think he's quite likely, or at least quite possibly subject to criminal prosecution for perjury, which I think he engaged in perjury. He lied when he told the Senate that he hadn't had contact with the Russians. And the fact that he has done this minimal step of purporting to recuse himself from the investigation into the Russian ties, there's a lot, even if he's not going to resign, which I think he should, there are a lot more steps that need to be taken to completely insulate him from the people who he supervises who will be conducting this investigation. So I think it's only the beginning of a saga that's going to go on for quite a while.
Rob Schofield is Director of Research at NC Policy Watch, part of the Liberal North Carolina Justice Center, and Becky Gray is with the Conservative John Locke Foundation. She's their Senior Vice President and a lobbyist. Thank you both.
Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks, Jeff.
To share this conversation or listen to it again, find it on our website, wunc.org.